You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is T. Frank Carr. T. Frank, did you have a nice Easter holiday?
Sure. Yeah, didn't have any ham, which I know is just ridiculous. But, you know, it was good. We, I'd say three-fifths of my immediate siblings got together, so that's always a good time, and we had some fun hanging out. So that's, you know, family, all that stuff. It was great.
If it makes you feel any better on the ham front, T. Frank, I probably ate enough for both of us, so how's that?
Good. That works out for me.
Okay. Okay, you're covered. All right, let's get to some Penn State football talk. T. Frank, one of the favorite conversations we have is talking about defense, especially what changes we might see with Tom Allen coming in. And I know we have talked about it. You have written about it over the past several weeks. I want to kind of consolidate that conversation and kind of work ourselves all the way through the process of what's going on with this Penn State defense. And I really think the starting point has to be, and you talked about this, it's Abdul Carter moving from linebacker to defensive end. Yeah. And that creates a bit of a cascade of things, the domino effect going on here, right?
I've been interested in this particular topic for about a month now, and I wrote a couple things about it. One is like, kind of, we're starting at the end, which, how do you adjust for that when you lose two linebackers? But James Franklin has talked about this in the spring and has clarified it to people's excitement, just to temper things a little bit. We just lost two starting linebackers. We feel good about the group. We need to replenish that depth. And he talked about, and I basically said, manufacture some depth this year with Kavion Keys and Tamir Robinson, two guys that are young linebackers they want to feel good about, they like, but they need to put in the work to be better football players. You know, my big picture view is Carter moving to defensive end. It speeds up the clock on these guys, and where maybe they won't be starters, but they do need somebody to step up into the two deep so they feel comfortable about having base linebacker packages of 4-3 with three linebackers, and just generally about the depth. But it's all kind of an academic conversation because they're playing three safeties. You know, like, to cut to the chase, they're going to play Jalen Reed out in the flat, and kind of working through the ideas and philosophies of a defense, and then the actual rubber meets the road, what's actually happening, what are they preparing for, and how does the defense look and feel as opposed to maybe just in comparison to what it did last year?
Well, it's interesting because you already hit one of the points where, what does the depth look like at linebacker? And my instant reaction is, wait a minute, you lost two pretty good linebackers when it's Curtis Jacobs going to the NFL and Abdul Carter moving on to defensive end. My question to you is going to be, James Franklin says he's happy with the depth at linebacker. Before we get to the fact that they might be playing an extra safety and one less linebacker some of the time, you know, how happy are you, T. Frank, with the linebacker depth?
So this is where I think the conversation is not cut and dried, you know? So James Franklin talked about at the beginning of the season and his opinion of the linebackers. They like the depth that they have. And then this past Tuesday, you know, last Tuesday, the third one of the spring period, he then said, you know, we think those guys have flashed against this particular offense. It's difficult to this offense that they have with Andy Kotelnicki attacks linebackers and safety. So it's hard for them. You know, this is a challenge. And this is a good starting point for them, but they want those guys to hit the ground running this summer and then into the fall to create that depth. So liking what you have and being comfortable with it, actually, you know, having to put it out on the football field, I think those are two separate conversations. And I think that's the nuanced conversation of moving Abdul Carter to defensive end, is you have pulled out one of those tent poles and put it somewhere else. So as much as, you know, we look at that safety position and we look at the linebackers and you feel good, they brought in three really good linebackers last year, it is something that they have to work through. So I generally like the depth that they have, but the question becomes, and this is where we've had this back and forth, where do you play Tony Rojas? Because that athleticism can play out in space, you know, in base 4-3 defense out as the Sam position. But when I asked Tom Allen, why is the Will so important to your defense? He said, that's your athletic guy. That's your playmaker. You need somebody there to, you know, set the tone and make those big plays. And you kind of need him both places. Unless a guy like Kavion Keys or maybe Keon Wiley or somebody steps up at that Will linebacker position to let him float between those two. When you add in the fact that Dom DeLuca is going to be a role player in this defense, it does mitigate a lot of this conversation. And then when you further add the fact that they're going to play with three safeties and put Jalen Reed down there into the field position, it dilutes the issue, right? So you're going to have a lot of players playing that kind of field spot, including some corners. So it's not a big deal, but it is something they have to sort out. And these are kind of the in the weeds perspective between, I think there's a blunt force trauma conversation of moving Abdul Carter to the edge is the best decision for him and for Penn State, and I don't care. End of story. And if that's where you want to go and end your conversation about this, okay, that's fine. You know, I would agree. His athleticism, playing at the line of scrimmage, he can give them something special if all that stuff works out. Another thing James Franklin has pointed out too, he has to learn to play the position. It's not just a slam dunk that he's going to be great. But here are the other considerations of what happens. And I think that just the tone around this has not been, no, duh, this was an obvious move. I think there's some conversation about if Abdul wasn't pushing for this and this wasn't what Abdul wanted, would Penn State have made this decision to move him to defensive end? Or was the linebacker depth good enough? And in the end, the question is, does it even matter? So there's some philosophical conversation in this. There's some tactical stuff. There's some team building. You know, it's a T. Frank sandwich. It's got everything I want in it.
Well, you know, starting with the Abdul Carter move to defensive end, I think it's something a lot of the Penn State fan base was, if not calling for, I think there were some of them at least talking about it, that there's some logic to it, some obvious logic to it. But perhaps a bit the way James Franklin framed it, of Abdul Carter and his family coming to them saying, hey, we'd like to make this change. I'll answer your hypothetical question, and it's just an opinion. I don't think Penn State would have been asking them to make that move, or at least it doesn't feel that way to me, T. Frank.
Yeah, and I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth. And if there's one way that you can get James Franklin to get his hackles up, it's if you say, hey, James, you said this, and that is absolutely not what I said. So, you know, that this is always a careful conversation. I do think he's pointed out the challenges in all of this of making the move. So it's not just the slam dunk, like we said, kind of rehashing a little bit of like this isn't just a obvious move with a lot of things that make sense. Now, they can make it make sense with moving Tony Rojas to the Will and having the moves that they're making. But if the defensive end position is stocked with a lot of good football players, and you can still, there's a lot of chicken of it. I don't even want to say chicken or the egg. There's a lot of, does any of this really matter? Because you can still blitz Abdul Carter, right? We've talked about this. You can add him in on third down where he's a pass rusher on every third down if you want to. But it's the idea of, what are you doing more often? Are you playing off ball or are you playing at defensive end? And I think, again, there is a case for, he wasn't necessarily reading at an exceptional level as a linebacker. So take away some of that eye candy, let him play fast and physical, and playing on the defensive end, playing at the defensive edge position can actually make him a better football player. So I'm not even disagreeing with any of these things. It's just the idea of parsing through these things, that what Penn State is doing right now, and that's the conversation. What they're doing right now is finding out who can play at linebacker and making sure the guys they feel really good about, that they've recruited, that they are ready to perform when it's necessary. And I think more than anything, going back to what I said originally, this speeds up the clock on those guys, where if these are redshirt freshmen, they don't have to be a part of the two deep. Where this year, kind of, yeah, at certain positions, you would feel much more comfortable if somebody stepped up at that will position to give you another guy you feel comfortable about and unlocking that versatility, maybe in Tony Rojas or just, you know, insurance purposes. So, you know, the backup Mike linebacker position, the backup will linebacker position, all those things factor into this conversation where you can still have Abdul Carter drop. He can still play in space, but primarily his position is defensive end now. So you're going to have him focus on doing that until you feel comfortable about everything else to do then the next thing.
And T. Frank, we started this with the linebacker depth and where it would be. Now, part of this question, and this is where we're headed with Tom Allen, we might see more 4-2 type defenses, yeah, which means a third safety is in.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, previously when Manny Diaz did something like this, someone might have been a safety playing linebacker. They were actually playing linebacker. But Tom Allen's talking about as an actual 4-2 where there is a third safety playing safety, correct?
Yeah, and if you want to go see what we're talking about here, I did a film breakdown of some Indiana defense against Penn State from 2018, I want to say it was. And it's pretty obvious, you know, kind of those nuances, they are subtle, but they are very meaningful in this particular defense because Tom Allen talks about changing windows and changing the picture for the quarterback. And if you've got a linebacker playing linebacker, that doesn't do as much as a safety playing linebacker. And some of the things you can do from a coverage perspective, I'm going to let you mentally fill in the blank of what you could do with that, because that's kind of where his creativity is its best. And when we talk about this is something I want to emphasize here. When you hear that this is a coverage-oriented defense and it's not as aggressive up front and they're not going to blitz as much, or Tom Allen says, I don't take as many chances sending six guys, that doesn't mean it's conservative. That doesn't mean it's bend but don't break. This is where we're talking about the aggressiveness of what he will do on the back end. How he will change the picture is uncommon. It is not as normal as it is to do, like we said, with what Manny Diaz did. And as Jalen Reed talked about, this playing primarily from a 4-3 with a Sam linebacker, even if that linebacker was Jonathan Sutherland. It's about the job you're asked to do as much as it is the body type and the skill set you come in with. So there's a lot of areas in this particular conversation where we're talking about versatility of players being able to do more than one thing and play more than one position, but also then the kind of nuances that make up the gray area, the shades and the tones of the in-between that I think this defense is trying to maximize. And I look at this and I think this is going to be a defense that's dominated by sub packages, not something that is going to play one thing a lot. And that's kind of a base defense. There's going to be a lot of things going on.
We'll get into more of the details when we get back to you, Frank. The first thing I want to ask you about is that lion position and ask you to define that for us when we come back after this.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He is T. Frank Carr. I am Jim Galante. We are talking Penn State football. It is quarter number two of our show. And T. Franks, we're getting more in depth into this new Tom Allen defense and what he's going to be doing. And we finished segment number one talking about using a third safety and two linebackers. And everyone likes to label these. We've talked about this before, the star position, or now they're going to call it the lion position. And it seems like we are going to have Jalen Reed has been identified as the guy who would probably be the primary lion.
Yeah.
As a bit of a hybrid, needing to do multiple things, explain the skill set and the tasks that that line position is going to have.
So this is from Tom Allen, a hybrid type player, safety-like player that can play the run but do different things and has coverage ability, leaning into those strengths of a football player. So, you know, it doesn't necessarily matter the position. It matters what skills you bring to the table and what we can do with you from that particular perspective if you're Tom Allen. So it's a hybrid position. It is not a pure linebacker, but it has linebacker responsibilities in most of the run fits, you know, where you're playing the run. Because remember, on every single play, the defense doesn't know what's coming. They don't know if it's a run play or a pass play when the ball is snapped. So you've got to have a plan for both. And so this position has to have run support to the tackle box. Usually they have a gap. They're playing it from a depth and from a space. And then they have to play coverages. So things that you typically see at that position are screen passes, RPOs, so things that are pulling you towards the line of scrimmage and then thrown out into space, or straight up screens going out into space where then you have to defeat a blocker and get to the player and play through contact with physicality above that of a what you would think of with a typical slot corner who's usually a small shifty player and doesn't have the same strength. So it's not just about man-to-man coverage and some of the other things we talked about. It is about you still have to have some of those skills that we saw Curtis Jacobs do this very well of being able to enforce in underneath coverage and roam that field and prevent as many plays as you do stop them. So the presence of that player, that chess piece in that area, can deter the offense from doing certain things because your numbers and your spacing are telling them to go elsewhere with the football. And then that player is still athletic enough to chase to where the ball is then decided to it's going. So again, it's just flipping the coin on its head from linebacker to coverage player, but that coverage player still has to execute all those same skills. If you had a player that could do all of it all the time and be everything and perfect, you know, that guy is Derwin James in the NFL, maybe Jalen Ramsey in the NFL. And those are the guys that are rare hybrids that can do everything.
Interesting. It seems like Jalen Reed has been identified. It seems, again, from my perspective, KJ Winston would be a good guy for that position. Is the reason not? Am I missing something? Or is he just too valuable playing the traditional safety position?
So there's a little bit here that I think is important when you look at positional strengths and what they've been doing. So Jalen Reed and KJ Winston both have those skills, yes. But KJ Winston's been playing the boundary safety. And with Zaki Wheatley, your other safety, who's playing a field safety, and that's his skill set of coverage, playmaking on the football, playing in deep coverage, but also playing in some man coverage in the slot. That's where Jalen Reed was playing last year. So this is the flexibility of Jalen Reed being able to do both, and it's a more seamless transition. It's not always just about the best particular fit for an individual player. It's about how does this group fit together? Because yes, KJ Winston, we could see at some point he plays that role, and they move. But then you're moving Jalen Reed to a new position, to that boundary position, and you're moving KJ Winston to a new position. So there's more learning, there's more dominoes. So that's really, I think, the main distinction here is that Jalen Reed, of the two, has played, is more movable thanks to the strengths of the other players on the roster.
Okay, now let's talk about Tom Allen addressing the media last week. He talked about adapting to the Penn State talent, specifically talking about the defensive ends. Mm-hmm. So how does that factor into this whole equation for the defense, that you have different kind of defensive ends here at Penn State probably than you had at Indiana?
I wouldn't say it's just the defensive end. The defensive line up front is what he said, and I think that's important because Penn State's defensive tackles also have length and also can run, as opposed to some of the guys that you're making decisions even about positional formatting one tech, three tech, edge, field, boundary, all these things. You're making those decisions based on, okay, what do we have at Indiana? Do we have a guy that can play the run really well but isn't as mobile? Is that going to be our boundary defensive end who's going to stop the run or is going to pass rush or chase from the backside? Do we have a one tech, but that he, you know, if you're Penn State, your positional talent can do a little bit of everything and can do more as opposed to maybe what you were doing at a lower level. So, and I apologize for saying Indiana being a lower level in the Big Ten, but you understand what a lower recruiting level is more accurate to say. So, you don't have to do as many of those things and make it in as many of those decisions. And that opens up more flexibility within the scheme and some more creativity where maybe we see a more selectively aggressive Penn State front seven. And really what he talked about was getting after the passer and getting to the quarterback. And that is the defensive end primarily conversation. But also, Micah McFadden, Aaron Casey, a lot of these guys that played linebacker for him blitzed a lot. You know, when I broke this down in the offseason, looking at their blitz percentages on third down or in passing situations, yes, he was as aggressive as Manny Diaz. But according to him, that was by necessity. He had to get to the quarterback because the most beautiful, intricate, complex coverage scheme that inverts and plays safeties at corner or rolls in an unexpected way, if you let it sit out there for 5 seconds, the quarterback's going to find somebody. So now, in the conversation he and I were having when I asked him that question is, you can do more on the back end because you're not sending players after the quarterback. So, you know, it is a zero-sum game. You could only run so many coverages if you blitz. There's, you know, you reduce your opportunities. So if you can get home with four, you can do more on the back end. It's not just about playing perfectly safe coverage. It's also about being able to do more things aggressively in coverage to take away those opportunities for the quarterback to throw the football on time. And those are going to be the things where he works through of when does he want to blitz? How does he want to blitz? It's going to be more by preference than by necessity because those guys up front can stop the run and can rush the passer equally well from different positions.
So if I could get pressure on the quarterback from my front four, it gives me a whole lot of more options on the back end, more men in coverage, more different things I could do. And you alluded to this before. The scary thing for Penn State fans is the last thing we want is that bend but don't break. That has frustrated Penn State fans for years. Go back into that. That should not be a concern, though, from your take on Tom Allen.
So I know that's where we started, but I do think that there is a fair concern that there is more of that than there was with Manny Diaz. So if you're comparing Manny Diaz to Tom Allen, yes. If you're comparing Tom Allen to Brent Pry, no. I wouldn't be as concerned. This, I don't think, is going to go so far as to some of those Penn State defenses that, you know, in the late 2010s, early 2000s. We're not talking about that. We're talking more about versus what they were doing, which was the pressure is the norm. The blitzing is the norm, which then reduces the number of routes based on you don't want to let the quarterback get a free rush and makes it more predictive where the ball is going to go. But there is, again, that risk reward of if you're playing off coverage. We saw this in time and time again against certain teams. If you're playing off coverage, even if it is a zone and you're blitzing, your underneath coverage defense is weaker. So you can be hit for quick passes. You can be hit over the top if the blitz doesn't get home. There is still opportunity for you to not get pressure. Understanding that pressure is the standard. Like, you have to get the ball out in a certain amount of time, no matter what, in this defense because they're bringing more than you can block. Or they're pretending to bring more than you can block. This is going to be more from standard alignments. The will linebacker is going to line up, you know, in the B gap. You're going to have edge rushers outside. You're going to have the Mike linebacker either in the B gap or the A gap. Like, it's going to be standard looking football. And then the question is, does the coverage and the pass rush match to create those opportunities to have that defense that generates turnovers and sacks the same way? So it is more bend but don't break, but I wouldn't say it's conservative. If that makes sense to you, I hope that I've explained it well because I use a lot of words.
Well, the way I interpret it, T-Frank, is you have Manny Diaz way over here on the risk-reward side, doing it on that risk side, and you have what we Penn State fans were concerned about, didn't like bend but don't break, where you're just, you don't want to give up the home run. Just saying you are less risk-taking than Manny Diaz doesn't mean you're conservative. I think that's the way I interpret it.
This offseason, I called it the Diaz Pry Index of conservative to aggressive. And I think the goal should be with this defense that you can be in the sweet spot. You can be aggressive in certain ways. And maybe it's not exactly the same of bringing six and seven guys and mugging the A gaps and having slot corners as edge rushers and bringing a lot of complex things up front. But you can still get pressure. You can still blitz and bring creative blitz packages with Tony Rojas from that second level while still having a more traditional coverage shell and traditional alignment. So the goal should be to be like right in the middle of that Pry Diaz index.
I like that. I think I'm going to use that, T. Frank. Also, one last question. We've talked here, you know, a 4-2 versus a 4-3 using that third safety instead of the third linebacker. But we can't get ahead of ourselves and just say, oh, that's what it, that's all they're going to run. There are still those situations where that 11th player, it might be a cornerback. It might be someone else. Who is that Daquan Hardy guy covering in the slot? It won't necessarily be the third safety.
So how this works, I'm going to say, just I want you to have something to go to bluewhiteillustrated.com for a sign up for 2 months for a dollar, code PSU1. So if you want to see how all of that works, what he just talked about, go to bluewhiteillustrated.com. You can go to T. Frank's film room. You can look up the Penn State sub package article I did or the film breakdown recently. But it's not a secret. He talked about the names and players of guys who they're looking at that position is AJ Harris, Cam Miller, Jalen Reed, and Zion Tracy all in the same breath. So yeah, there's a variety of body types and talents that are going to be at that nickel position, which they're calling the Lion.
Very good, T. Frank. That's it for quarter number two. Stick around. It's your questions, and we ask T. Frank when we come back. Hello, and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He is T. Frank. I'm Jim. It's quarter number three, which of course means it's time to ask T. Frank. This is where we take your questions for T. Frank, and he will amaze us as always with his answers. Right, T. Frank?
Sure. I won't contradict you.
Fair enough. And if you want to send a question to T. Frank, download our app, Keystone Sports. You'll see the Ask T. Frank button. And it's intuitively obvious from there. All right, let's start with Tom from Sayre, who says, with the injury to Smolak, how does that affect the quarterback room? Any chance there'll be less running asked of Drew Aller?
No, I don't think this changes much. And, you know, our Ryan Snyder broke this story over on the Blue White Illustrated message board a couple weeks ago. So again, a great reason for you to go over there and check that out. And then, you know, officially put out the article, I want to say it was this past weekend. So yeah, not to toot our own horn, but I always want to give a shout out to the other guys on the show because they do a great job. But Jackson Smolak, the way this offense is going to operate.
Can I stop you for a second, T. Frank?
Sure.
Yeah. Here's what. When you say it, it might sound self-serving. So I'll say it. I'm Keystone Sports. I'm addicted to Blue White Illustrated, okay? I am. There's so much information there. If you're a Penn State fan, go there. Yes, I sing the praises of T. Frank every week because he gives us so much information. But the other guys, too, you got some great stuff there. It's the best investment you can make as a Penn State fan. There you go. Not self-serving, T. Frank.
Thank you.
That's me saying it. There you go.
Appreciate it.
All right, pick it up.
So, you know, Ethan Grunkmeyer is a great, I don't call him dual threat, but athletic quarterback. So, you know, Bo Pribula, Drew Aller, I wasn't putting these guys into different buckets or categories of this guy's more of a passer. The way they've run the offense, from what we've been able to see, and James Franklin kind of admitted to it without openly saying it, the quarterback is going to run. So They're going to use that to their advantage. And Gronkmeyer is a guy that has the ability to throw on the run better than anyone else on the roster. And that's something hard to say because I think Drew Aller is good at that. And I think Bo Perpiel is good at that. He has an uncanny ability to have pinpoint accuracy while on the move. We've documented that throughout his recruiting process. And so you're still hoping he never sees the field. And I understand this is a depth question and a concern about that. But I don't have many concerns. Ethan is a smart kid. I think he is very, you know, the football understanding. If they got into a situation where they need the third quarterback, the season is over. Like, let's just, I don't want to be too dramatic, but if Drew Aller and Bo Perbula are hurt and you're going to your third quarterback, things have not gone the way you wanted them to such a degree that I think it's fair to say it's nobody's fault that the season is, you're wondering what the point of the rest of the season is. So let's get out of that hypothetical in general. But to answer the question, no, Ethan Grunkmeyer, I think, is just as good at operating this offense as either of the top two guys, and long term might be the best of the three.
That's interesting, and you're probably going to answer the other question, but I just want to point out two things. Number one, you can't play scared. You can't play scared. And for those who would want to contradict you when you say, hey, the season's over if you get to your third quarterback, please do not bring up Ohio State from, what is it, the 2014 Cardale Jones was
Cardale
the third
Jones.
Quarterback.
Yeah.
That's the exception to the rule where someone got down to their third quarterback. But, yeah. I don't think you could play scared. And let's keep with that quarterback theme. It's Freddie from Altoona. He said, with Grunkmeyer one step closer to the field, what is your confidence level if he is needed this year, T. Frank?
I think it's the same as any. It's the same as any high four-star quarterback who's also a freshman. You believe in the talent. I believe that Ethan Grunkmeyer is going to be an above-average starter in the Big Ten as a baseline, you know, as a guy who can stand out and do all the things in a modern college offense to a high degree. But there's a massive learning curve, especially if you aren't the starter and the team is not feeding you the reps necessary to be the starter. Like, there's all, we had the conversation in 2022 about getting Sean Clifford ready to go to operate Mike Yurcich's offense. And while it was a more complex offense that had more intricacies from the passing perspective, I'm not saying that it's a good or bad thing. I'm just saying that that is the way it's been described, and that's what I've seen on film. You need all those reps to get in for Drew Aller. Same conversation. Even if it is easier, more intuitive, it does give you more options for better explosive plays. He still needs to know the offense, so you're going to plow as many reps into your top two quarterbacks as possible, meaning that Grunkmeyer's got to do a lot of mental reps and a lot of mental processes. And last season, Jackson Smollett came in spring football, wasn't, it was a little bit above water for him or underwater for him. And then he hammered the playbook in the offseason and came back and was making plays like we saw him make in high school. So again, are you, Freddie, expecting Ethan Grunkmeyer to step on the field and win you a national championship as a freshman? Guys have done it. You know, Clemson's done it, but it also had a whole lot of talent around him that went in the first round when we're talking about a freshman quarterback going on and succeeding that way and being a five-star to begin with. So, like, there's a whole layer of nuance. I believe Ethan Grunkmeyer is going to be a great quarterback. Do I believe he's going to be a great quarterback in his freshman year? No. I don't know to know. That's where I am on that that particular idea.
Chances are we won't find out. T. Frank.
Yeah. And I'm surprised. I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but I'm a little surprised by like the line of questioning this week of starting with Ethan Grunkmeyer and the injury to Jackson Smollett. I would imagine when your third quarterback gets injured, like kind of just, the water keeps flowing is what I thought, but we're having these, like, I'm not mad at the conversation. I'm just surprised that we're having this particular conversation.
Well, it's the off season, T. Frank. And I was talking with one of the other guys the other day about, the press conference from James Franklin. And I said, it was a big nothing. There's really, which is a good thing. All right. I think James Franklin is thrilled to have very little news. News in the spring is usually bad news, not good news. You know, not to trivialize it, but as you said, this is the third quarterback.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how often we've had to depend on the third quarterback. Yes, yes, I remember Iowa from a few years ago. So let's move. So let me ask you this, T. Frank. Mm-hmm. I could go. We've got a couple more questions to go. Do you want to stay on the quarterback theme, or do you want to change up?
It's dealer's choice, whatever you had planned. Like I said, I'm not mad at it. I'm just surprised that we're having that conversation.
All right, let's stick with the quarterback theme. Just one more question. William from Piscataway says, Zollers is soon to make his decision. I guess that's Matt Zollers. Are you as high on him, T. Frank, as his ranking? And how would you describe his style of play?
Yeah, this is a great question. I actually, I dipped into his film. So we recorded this earlier in the week. And I dipped into his film at the beginning of the week just to see how he fits at Penn State. Because what I did is I went and I looked at all of the competing teams that he's visiting here in the spring, including Alabama, which is a new one, and how he fits in that offense, given what I saw when I watched a little bit of his full high school film at Spring Ford. And what I found was, like, he fits Penn State very, very well. That offense, first off, shout out to the Spring Ford offensive coordinator and that coaching staff. They run a lot of college level concepts, which is like pro style for the high school, where they're running RPOs, read options, a lot of different run schemes and blending the two together. And I think it produced pretty good results, and Matt Zollers takes advantage of all those things. So his decision-making, from what I saw, very quick, efficient, great feet, great touch on the ball, throws the ball really well. I don't know about the accuracy just yet. I got to go in and I got to look more at some of these plays and dive into a little bit more of his decision-making on film, of what I can understand from the high school tape, to get a real, real sense of what he is. So I guess at, you know, kind of a quick and dirty thing of what I've seen from the highlight film and what I think he has the ability to be, I think he has a higher ceiling than Ethan Grunkmeyer and Bo Prabula in terms of that ability to run and throw at the same time. And again, that's really good. That is not a slight on either of those guys, especially Ethan Grunkmeyer, who I think has superior talent to most guys they've recruited. And here's a guy that has maybe a smidge more. So I think he's the real deal. I think he's got a great arm. He throws the ball really well. His technique looks good. He can run. Like, he's the reason I'd say he's a little bit better than Grunkmeyer in terms of a prospect is because he's more athletic with a bigger frame. So really good. Like, this is a really good football player.
Very good. And you don't want to lose a kid like that who's a Pennsylvania guy. All right, let's go to Paul in Ithaca, who says, I'm assuming Fleming, Wallace, and Lambert Smith are the first wide receivers. Is there anyone among the rest that I think could make a difference on this year's squad?
I think all of them have the opportunity, and I don't want to just be repeating what James Franklin has said or what Andy Kotelnicki has said, but the talent here is not the problem. I was very excited to watch Malik McClain play football at Penn State because of his physical talent. He is all of his 6'3 or whatever, 6'4, whatever he is on the roster. Like, he is a tall, big athlete that can run pretty good intermediate routes. Like, he can turn and run pretty well and make those precise cuts for somebody who's got a big bodied frame. He's got to put it all together, and he's got to be put in position to succeed. So, you know, I think Liam Clifford has value that he can add. Caden Saunders can be a big part of this offense in a role behind the whoever is the starting slot receiver. Anthony Ivey could have something to contribute. We talked about McClain. You know, I think those are the guys I would identify that have like the talent and what I've seen where they can produce something. But even guys like Carmelo Taylor have the speed and the ability, but they're just young and raw and need to develop. So I would say there's maybe five or six guys on this roster. You could have a full two deep of talented players that doesn't even count Tysier Denmark and Peter Gonzalez, who aren't here yet. So this is where I need to see the blue-white game to see how and where the early identifiers of how and where they're using players, that at least is a starting point before you go into the summer, to know the names I should be highlighting of the group. But really, I mean, James Franklin said it. They've got a lot of talent. It needs to separate. Somebody needs to say, I am now that receiver, where it doesn't matter that I have talent, I'm producing. And that's going to be the challenge for the next 2 weeks heading into the summer.
All right, let's do real quick. Mark from Scranton says, hey, T. Frank, my buddies and I talk Penn State football all the time. Can you help me sound smart? Tell me the play about that we should.
You broke up there, but if you want to sound smart, know the difference between RPO and read option. This is like my quest as somebody on the internet. RPO is a pass play tacked onto a run play. Read option is when the quarterback reads a player and chooses to keep the ball and run or give. They are separate things, despite the fact that even football people sometimes use them interchangeably.
All right, very good, T. Frank. That's it for quarter three. And as T. Frank, we got one more segment to go. Stick around for that. Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He is T. Frank. I'm Jim. We're talking Penn State football. This is quarter number four, and I had a little breakup there on our last question, T. Frank, and I don't want, what was it, Mark from Scranton? I don't want him to feel cheated on his question and answer. He wanted to sound smart in front of his buddies, and what he actually asked, T. Frank, the final part of his question was, tell me the players we're not talking about that we should. I guess these are the under-the-radar guys. Because yeah. You're an expert, T. Frank. Who are those guys? Just give us a couple names so okay, Mark can so feel smart.
This is the conversation we have on the BWI live show when I ask this question, or this question is asked of our experts. And Fitz put it perfectly the other day when he said, we talk about these guys year-round. There are no under-the-radar players for us. So that's where I'm starting from of like, I think I've said literally every name on the roster. And I talk about, we have three 60-minute shows a day or a week, plus whatever bonus content we do. So anyway, Cam Wallace, third running back. I don't want to say lock it in, but he's going to be a factor in the offense. He's one guy that I've been noticing more, and I think is going to be a big part of not a big part, but a bigger part than we might expect. Jamea Lyons can be a big part of the defensive end rotation, but now Abdul Carter's there. So defensively, it's tough. I would say defensively, it's tough because we already know about Tony Rojas. We've talked about the young linebackers, but I also don't know that they're going to have a massive impact, but they need to be there. I guess the other guy would be AJ Harris, where we said, this guy's got a lot of talent. I loved his film coming from Georgia. Didn't know how he's going to translate, how quickly, all those things. It seems like the way they're talking about him, and when we ask about players, he keeps coming up. AJ Harris is going to be a name to know at that cornerback position.
Who are the guys at linebacker? We know Tony Rojas is going to play. Who are the next linebackers in line? Who are the guys who are going to be part of the two deep? Who we might see on the field a bit more this year? I don't think people are talking about them enough.
So you're not going to like the answer, but Tyler Elsdon is going to be a factor sure. in the offense or the defense again, unless a guy like Tamir Robinson can pass him on the depth chart. Like you can't just be big and long and fast and athletic. And Tamir has not played a whole lot of linebacker in his career. By the time in high school he got around to playing Mike linebacker, he got hurt, and then he didn't see the field until the spring when he was at Penn State. So the learning curve for him, now two defensive coordinators, all those things, like he needs to kind of settle into the position. And a lot of that stuff is technique and learning and the foundational principles of the position, not just the defensive scheme. So that stuff all translates. And then it's going to be, I think, a battle between Kavion Keys and Keon Wiley for, let's just say, third, fourth linebacker snaps, somewhere in the two deep where they need a guy to play either the backup Will or the backup Sam. And I don't know exactly how that's going to work out. We have to see who's behind Dom DeLuca in the base defense and where Tony Rojas is playing and how Tony Rojas is playing. So I think there's room for one of those two guys. And those are really the names you need to know this spring heading into the summer.
Those last two are the ones that I think at least one of them is going to really show this year, T. Frank. All right, let's move to our quarter four topic. And this is another fun fan topic. We always hear from James Franklin. He has the red light, yellow light, green light for the freshmen. Who are the freshmen who are going to play? Essentially, who are the players who might burn a red shirt among freshmen? We always love that last recruiting class, T. Frank. Who are the names we should know from that recruiting class who might burn a red shirt?
So I think you got to start with Cooper Cousins. You can't go any farther and not say Cooper Cousins. And that's shocking, given that he's a center and a guy who's going to play, presumably he's going to play this year. I'm pulling up the recruiting roster so I can, if it sounds like I'm vamping, I am. This is, Quentin Martin is, I know I just talked about Cam Wallace when in terms of the running back three, and I'm not coming off of that, but the question is, does Quentin Martin make a role for himself as a kick returner and on special teams, and are there enough snaps at the fourth running back position to merit burning his red shirt? So that's really the conversation of, can he be a core special teamer? Kind of like, let's just pick a random guy. Elliot Washington last year was a core special teamer, or Zion Tracy was a core special teamer, and then they fit in on defense where they fit in. If there was enough reps where it made sense, they got him in enough games late for it to matter that they burned his red shirt. Quentin Martin, to me, is on that path as an athlete who is here early. He's physically talented, and he has a special skill that we could identify him, Catron Allen, Nick Singleton on that kickoff return team. And if he wanted to take some of those snaps off of those two veterans, I think that would be an area that makes sense for Quentin Martin. I would have said John Mitchell and Antoine Belgrave shorter, but it sounds like they're not a part of that slot cornerback conversation. So maybe one of those two guys does present themselves as somebody who you want to get more reps for just to build for the future, but it'll have to be special teams and they'd have to surprise, I think, at this point. Outside of that, it's tough. And that's a good thing. This is a good and deep Penn State team. So I don't see an obvious path to the field for a lot of guys who have the talent and the earmarkers of a guy who can play early. The other guy I'll just throw as a wild card is Tysier Denmark. Not here during the spring, but has the physical skills to be a slot receiver. Slot receiver's pretty sticky right now with three guys I can name off the top of my head that I already have named off the top of my head as players who can play that position well. So he would have to come in and leapfrog several players who are veteran and pushing for their opportunity this year in a crowded receiver room. So those are the names I would pull up, but you know, there's always one that surprises us every year, right?
Well, there is, but there's several different factors that come into having a true freshman play. One of them is the position they're playing. We don't typically expect a quarterback to step in and play as a freshman. We don't expect, for example, a center to come in and play that first year. They might start at guard first before moving over to center, plus just offensive line. Are you physically prepared as a freshman to play? You're an 18-year-old playing against 22-year-old men up front. That's tough, which makes it all the more impressive that we're actually having the conversation about Cooper Cousins, T. Frank.
Yeah, I wouldn't have expected this. I wouldn't have expected this even a year ago. Like, knowing how much we liked Cooper and thought he was good and thought he had all of the potential in the world. I mean, I said it on the show multiple times. The stock answer is no. A offensive lineman is not going to play as a freshman. He's not going to be a starter as a freshman unless something is wrong. And furthermore, like you said, play him at guard, give him an easy, ease him onto the field instead of asking him to do all the things. But everything we've heard about him, you know, and again, things we've talked about with football players after practice and getting kind of the feedback on some of the players, and Cooper Cousins keeps coming up, not just as an athlete, but as a football player, as somebody who's putting in the work to be good at football. And I think that that's an underrated part of this conversation where, yes, he's 6'6", 320, and some of his offensive line counterparts need to grow into their bodies. So that's a fair and obvious thing to say. But this is where the making of a great football player happens, is in the work habits. And having that talent and then accentuating it with the ability to learn what you need to know and be prepared. And it's kind of the same thing as Anthony Donko, who again was a surprise last year in that he still redshirted, but became the guy through work habits, preparation, and having those physical talent already. He became the guy that now we're talking about instead of some of the other highly recruited guys, because that behind the scenes stuff that we just don't know from watching film and that coaches get a way better understanding than we do, that's what makes a guy ready to play early. And so that's, I mean, with Cooper, that's a big part of it.
And what I like about that whole discussion, though, at center is, as good as Cooper Cousins appears to be, he's not going to be forced in. There's a big hole at center. He has to go in there because we have no choice. You have Nick Dawkins. You have a veteran guy. And all conversations about Nick Dawkins is he's a tremendous teammate, leader, all of those things. You hope Nick Dawkins can be the guy to at least start the year, and Cooper Cousins could work his way in, be number two, be part of the two deep, and by the 2025 season, he's just flying as the starter. You talked about Quentin Martin, and this is the thing, too, and you also talked about Cameron Wallace. We forget about those redshirt freshmen, those second-year guys, so quickly, T-Frank, when the freshman class comes in, because I always call it the shiny new toy. But when we had, I don't think James Franklin looks to deceive us when he talks, when he meets the media. And the way he talked about Cameron Wallace, he did everything he was supposed to be in the offseason. He changed his body. Just the positivity from James Franklin convinces me also he's going to be number three.
Yeah, and it makes sense. He's a year older. The whole conversation makes sense from Penn State fans' perspective and from the reality of the situation where Cam Wallace is a three-star. He's from Georgia, I want to say. Lower level competition in Georgia, where the way it's been described to me is all Georgia football is good, but he's not playing in some of the metropolitan leagues that produce, all the guys that go on to, all of the all-star games, etc. But he's a guy that has versatility and football intelligence, 5'9", a little bit undersized, but he's 200 pounds right now. So he's filled out. Like, looking at him, the way he moves, the way he's built like a running back. He looks exactly the way you want him to look, especially for a redshirt freshman. And his skill set of having the ability to run routes, good hands, all those things. Plus, he's been in the room for a year, knows Jaywan Sider, knows what's expected of him. So now he just needs to learn the offense. And I think a thing that people, I've tried to say this, but it's great that Quentin Martin has those receiving skills. That's going to benefit him in the long term. He is not a polished running back. He's not a polished athlete either, from what James Franklin and Chuck Losey said of, like, they were surprised at how raw he was in a lot of different ways, with the understanding that means there's more upside to tap. And he's already really impressive at 6'1", 190. But the delta there of physical and positional understanding is what we've seen guys break that curve. And my stock answer is always to be conservative on that, to not place too much pressure on those guys. But he's got to be able to run the football and receive and do all these things and physically develop. So there's just more things he's got to do to leapfrog a guy who's already a good football player with a strong base of skills in his own right.
Well, the lesson all us Penn State fans have to learn is if you're depending on a freshman to fill a hole, that means you have a hole in that position.
All right,
T-Frank, that is it for today's show. Thank you. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.